Hey guys, welcome to the New York Film Academy Hour. We are back, and today we're talking about Golden Pipes going to the silver screen. I've got Frank Sinatra, Mary J. Blige, and so many more coming up for you. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
Yes, you hear that music, you know what time it is. We're not on Broadway, we're here in Hollywood, but the feeling of musicals is in the air. Mary J. Blige, as we talked a little bit about last week with our Oscars recap, or 2 weeks ago, it's been a time, was first woman nominated for Best Song and Best Supporting Actress in a role ever in the history of the Academy, 90 years. Big deal, so we thought we'd come in. Of course, to my left, I have Peter Rayner back again. Again, get his book, Rayner on Film. It is excellent. He's going to break down some of the greats with me. How you doing today, Peter?
Hi. Yeah, there's a lot of singers in the movies, not all of them great actors.
Yeah, we started our conversation today talking about, you know, some of our favorite singers and trying to make that transition to the stage. I mentioned my fave Beyonce, who I love, but who, you know, not the best actress.
Yeah, well, I have a theory that a lot of great singers, certainly not all of them, great pop singers, jazz, rock, so forth, opera singers, are very good actors because, in a sense, they're already acting, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, let's just take Sinatra as an example. You know, you have to put across a story, essentially, with the lyrics. You have to move. You can't just stand there like a log. You have to emphasize certain words. You know, all of the things that you do as an actor, and you have to make it believable. And so they're already halfway there, I think, if they really put across a song in the right way.
Absolutely. And it's interesting to see, like, who makes it and who's not. Because, I mean, even Madonna, who, you know, maybe not the world's best vocalist, but certainly a performer in her own right, had some trouble making it into the movies. You know, Evita aside, which has kind of become this cult classic, you know, not considered a great film, but
camp
certainly a
classic.
Film. Yeah, there you go. There you go. A camp classic. I think a lot of people expected that she would be able to go the distance in that area.
Yeah, well, Desperately Seeking Susan, I think, was her first real movie, and she was quite good in it. But subsequently, you know, Dick Tracy and Evita
Beaches. What's the one she did with her husband at the time?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Right, Sean Penn. Yeah, they were all terrible.
Yeah.
And she was terrible in them. The Truth or Dare sort of doesn't count because it's a documentary and she was sort of playing herself, but she was playing a role as herself, which, you know, she's always changing the way she looks and performs anyway, her persona. But it was weird with her because I thought she might actually develop into a good actress. But it may be that there's no there and that all of this constant, you know, role changing is evidence of that.
Definitely. Well, let's switch into some of our very people who are talented at both, which is rare. They're awesome. Let's start with the classic Frank. Frank Sinatra is kind of the first singer to make a real splash on the silver screen. He's played in like a ton of roles, Guys and Dolls, a lot of military roles, which was kind of interesting for a guy who was able to, wiggle out of, but found a way not to have to go into the army when the draft was still around.
Like John Wayne, yeah, right.
Tell us a little bit about that transition for him from a song to the screen.
Yeah, well, he started out as a kind of Bobby Soxer idol.
Yeah.
And, you know, this you know, thin crooner who had people swooning over him, you know, almost like on level with the Beatles in the 40s. And so it was a natural that he would transition to movies. And a lot of his early films, you know, Young at Heart, you know, he's basically playing a variation on the Bobby Soxer persona. But when his singing career took a dive in the late 40s, early 50s.
I just want to pause there. A lot of people do not know that this happened. Frank Sinatra endured.
Yeah.
Like, he went from teen idol to the dive. That's when he started doing stage shows in Vegas.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine. So he sort of clawed his way back into movies with the idea that he was going to show everybody that he could be a, quote, real actor, a serious actor. And he lobbied extremely hard for the role of Maggio in From Here to Eternity. The actor in The Godfather who gets the role with the horse's head and everything, I mean, it's never been demonstrated that that was Sinatra, but that's certainly what everybody thinks. You know, be that as it may, he was quite terrific in it, and it was, and he won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor. So you would have thought that that would have set him on his way to doing nothing but really serious stuff. And he did have some amazing performances in his career. The Man with the Golden Arm, where he plays a junkie, directed by Otto Preminger, is a very strong performance. And The Manchurian Candidate, which is one of my favorite films in general, the original.
I still haven't seen the original.
Yeah, oh, it's amazingly great. Yeah, I mean, even the score by David Amram is amazing. That's, I think, his best performance in the movies. It's an absolutely extraordinary piece of work. He plays opposite, you know, Lawrence Harvey, and Angela Lansbury gives a classic performance. It's a great, great movie, and you could tell that he really cared about it. My feeling about Sinatra was that, you know, Pauline Kael once said if he cared about acting as much as he cared about singing, he would have become a great actor. But in a lot of his, you know, Rat Pack stuff and Four for Texas and Ocean's 11, and I mean, so they're fun, but he's not really putting a whole lot into it. He's just sort of playing himself, you know, well, but with finesse, but he's not getting into it like he really could as an actor. But I do think that at his finest, and, you know, Man with the Golden Arm and From Here to Eternity and Manchurian Candidate especially, he was a great actor.
I think it's interesting to hear that he not only wasn't really putting himself fully into the character, but I've read stories where he wanted to be as good. I hear in Guys and Dolls where Marlon Brando was given the lead, Marlon Brando not really a singer. He was livid that they would choose Brando over him.
Yeah, you know, and he was in the musical, film musical of Pal Joey, which was adulterated for the screen, but you know, he was pretty good in that. But he just, I don't know, I mean, he High Society, you know, Bing Crosby was in that. He definitely didn't skimp singing in the movies, and some of the movies where he sang in were quite good. But overall, I don't think that he really... The other thing about him is that he was notorious for only doing one take.
If you guys watched the FX drama, oh my gosh, Joan and... I'm blanking so hard.
Oh, the Joan Crawford, Betty Davis.
Yes, yeah. Joan versus Betty. They have a moment in there where he's filming like some Western and he's got to have all this like glitzy, like shiny suits, and dude is just dying. He's like, that's not what you would have worn. He's like, this is what I wear. I'm Frank Sinatra. And then, yeah, they were trying to get him to a second take and he is like, have you met me? I don't do second takes.
Yeah, no, he I think it was in his contract. You know, he did not do second takes. He actually, you know, he directed a movie once.
No, I didn't know.
Called
this.
None But the Brave. It was like a war movie.
Great title.
I think I saw it when it came out. This was in the 60s. I think it's set, you know, it's a World War II movie set in the Asian Pacific. But yeah, he directed it on the Warner's lot.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, I mean, it's. When you're Sinatra, you can get terrific cinematographer, editor, you know, all tech credits pro, as they say in Variety. So it's not going to look terrible or anything. You know, you have the safety net under you, but it's certainly not a work of an auteur.
Copy.
And it's, I believe, the only time he ever directed. I wonder if he only did one take of the stuff that he shot, you know, because he was in it, too.
I wonder if it changed his perspective at all on the two-take theory. Like, you know, maybe just try again. We talked a little bit about Sinatra's style, and I know that there are a lot of great movies that he performs in, but dang it, I'm a sucker for the classics. So I chose Guys and Dolls, and this is a song written for him. I think it's kind of like an appeasement for not giving him the lead. Let's take a look.
Speech.
Yeah, give us a little speech.
Yeah. Look at these colors. These films.
Unaccustomed as I am to getting married, I am taking this occasion here to say
Look at him own the room.
And Adelaide are finally naming the day. Though she knows deep in her heart I'm a phony and I'm a fake.
She wants Sinatra's classic flirting style on display here.
Yeah, well, just remember this is all done in one take.
My second take wouldn't have killed you, Frank. All I'm saying. Is taking a
chance on me. I could see Brando doing this.
Taking a chance, I'll be respectable and nice.
I think you could have pulled this song off. This is not too vocally challenging.
Yeah.
What's scripted in this range? What I also like about this is in reading people's reviews of Sinatra from the time, because he was Italian, which people were like, you can't be the, like, it's kind of the sexy bad boy on the edge, where people were like, you don't mess with the, you don't marry an Italian, essentially. And to see, like, the idea that, who is this small dude with all this glib that he can get? But you see it instantly, especially if you get to see any of his sock hop stuff. The girl's just wild over this kid.
Yeah, yeah. No, he was a huge, huge star in the 40s. But, you know, he could argue that he did his best acting in his club appearances when he sings all of those great standards. And he really puts his soul into it. And what I always liked about Sinatra also as a singer is that he always credited the writers of the song. He didn't just go up there and start singing. He before each song, he would say, you know, a song by so-and-so, lyric by so-and-so.
Oh, that's really great.
Yeah, I mean, he made a point of that. Because he knew that he owed a lot of his success to the songs, obviously. Mm. You don't just go up there and just, you know, scat. He had a lot of respect for the craft, certainly in the way that he spoke and spoke the lyrics. Mm. And in his best performances, you see that that kind of care exists as well.
Based off Al Johnston, too, right? He was like a big Al Johnston fan. He was
Al Jolson.
Jolson, thank you. And he was mimicking like the early style, and that's kind of how he got into it. Fascinating. You guys can learn a lot about Frank Sinatra. He's got a lot of movies out there, a lot of songs, lots of biographies. Check that out. I want to move on to one of my favorite divas of stage, someone who truly has the respect for all crafts, Barbara Streisand.
All right.
Who is perhaps the most successful singer to film, actress, actor, person ever. If you guys haven't seen her do, like, Funny Girl is my favorite, but there's a lot of great things you can see her in. Talk to me a little bit about the popularity Barbara Streisand had at such a young age, because there are people who just, like, that's their Beyonce is Barbara Streisand.
Right, yeah. Well, Streisand was I think in her late teens when she started doing shows, off-Broadway and Broadway and Funny Girl. I think early 20s. And she won the Oscar for Funny Girl.
Which she deserved.
She was tied with Katharine Hepburn. It was one of the very rare ties. Streisand was an unschooled actress. And I don't say that disparagingly because, you don't see the actor's studio in there very much. You don't see a lot of stage training per se, even though she did Broadway. You know, she was a singer whose acting sort of came naturally with the songs, but she didn't study acting in any real way. And her performances have a kind of, you know, loose-limbed aspect to them that's always been very appealing. When it doesn't work, she doesn't have the kind of safety net that actors with a great deal of craft and training have had starting out, and there are movies of hers that just don't hold up because there's nothing going on there. I would say even a film like A Star Is Born was not terribly successful, even though it was a big movie and she'd already. But Funny Girl is a great movie, and she's amazing in it. I mean, you know why she's a star in that film, and her comic timing is unbelievable. It just, you know, crack comic timing, and she could also pull off the dramatic scenes too. She was a terrific director. Maybe still will again be a, you know, direct another film.
I would
film.
Love to see her hop behind the camera again.
Yentl is an amazing film. I think
I have emotions about Yentl, yeah. Like the father-daughter relationship, yeah. About trying to live beyond what people expect to be your means. It is really good.
Yeah, I mean, and she directed it really well. It's a terrific performance. The Owl and the Pussycat, one of her earliest films, is a terrific comedy. With George Segal, who's in there, a great team. You know, it's based on a hit stage play. Herbert Ross directed it. It's a really, really funny movie, and she's just great in it. It's a great comic performance. There's what was the film that Up the Sandbox? Up the Sandbox is another film that most people don't know about. It was directed by Irvin Kershner. And she plays a kind of humdrum housewife in New York who keeps having these fantasies, and the film follows, you know, her fantasies, including my favorite was imagining that she's having an affair with Castro when he's visiting New York, you know, on a dancing with Castro. And but it's the most human scaled of her performances. She's the most, like, you know, a quote real person in that movie. It's a very accessible
more than her. Oh gosh, what's the name of her Robert Redford
play? The Way We Were.
Yes.
She's very good in that.
So good.
She's very, very good in that. And you know, she doesn't act much anymore, and she's very, very picky about what she chooses to do. She directed another film, you know, after Yentl, and that got Lauren Bacall a supporting actress nomination.
Wow.
But you know, for the most part, I think she was penalized a bit for being so strong and out there as a woman in her era. So even though she was phenomenally successful and still is, there were a lot of people who felt, you know, sort of turned off to the fact that she was so, you know, powerful. Even Hello, Dolly, which is not a great movie, she's wonderful in it. She's just this force of nature. And she really just commands the screen at all times. You
Robert Streisand is in Hello, Dolly? That's Bette Midler. Am I wrong?
You know, Hello,
are
Dolly.
Are they both in it?
No, Walter Matthau and Barbara Streisand,
okay,
are the stars of Hello, Dolly. Yeah, it was directed by Gene Kelly. And, it was the film that sort of broke 20th Century Fox, because it cost so much that they had to sell off. Between that and Cleopatra, they had to sell off like half the studio.
Those came out at the same time?
No, but you know, Cleopatra was problematic, but Hello, Dolly really was. I mean, they had to sell off a lot of the set.
I've never heard this about Hello, Dolly. Yeah. Cleopatra is legendary. I mean,
yeah.
with the marriage and sex scandal on top of all of the financial burden, and then the film comes out and it's not, you know, what people had hoped. There's like a lot of scandal around that, but I guess maybe because Hello, Dolly is so popular, maybe it didn't get that kind of... the news didn't follow it throughout the ages. That's really fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, if you worked at Fox at the time, I certainly didn't. But you know, I think it was clear that, okay.
Well, Streisand is the kind of person who's able to pull. I mean, I don't know if you've seen, there's a viral picture of her going around recently, of her in her trophy room, just surrounded by her
building.
Awards. It's amazing. She's incredibly talented. She's done a lot.
Yeah.
I picked a video that highlights, as he said, her comedic talents. I think that, to your note earlier, that kind of raw, exposed talent, it just makes her that much more fascinating to watch. There is, because without the safety net, there's no polish there. It's all, it feels so genuine and real and in your face. And I love this... this song. I chose Funny Face, obviously. Funny Girl, sorry.
Right.
Funny Face is a different movie. And this is just, it's
Not Funny Lady. That wasn't so good.
No. Was that a continuation of Funny Girl?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
They should have just kept it with Funny, it ends Funny Girl.
Perfectly. So let's take a look at this clip real quick.
Don't tell me
not to live, just sit and putter. Life's candy and the sun's a ball of butter. Don't bring around a cloud to rain on my parade.
Once again, costuming is out of the park. So good.
Tell me not to fly.
And this was directed by William Wyler, who was a great director who went back to the late 20s.
Wow.
Directed many, I think, more Oscar-winning performances than any other director in Hollywood history.
The way he shoots this entire film, it feels alive. I don't have a better word for it. It's just...
She was very well tended in this film. Between Wyler and the cinematographer, James Wong Howe is a great, great cinematographer. Shot it.
Look at these shots. How? Back in the day. Like, I just don't. Like, today, a drone, 20, 30 years ago, maybe a helicopter. But this is just, it's so smooth and wide. It's just, wow. It's a real train moving, right? Like, in focus the whole, how?
Yeah, this was not one take.
I love the mix of like
this is the finale.
Desperation and excitement and just focus.
Hey, Mr. Honesty.
I'm not gonna lie, I thought I had picked the roller skating from earlier, which is a lot more showing her comedic style.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of comedy in her oeuvre.
Mm-hmm. Look at her face.
Well, this is kind of touching, too.
Nothing will stop this woman. Also, so much running in this skirt.
And what kind of shoes is she wearing? There we go.
Just incredible. Yeah. Yes, and then the giant Statue of Liberty. Really wonderful moment for Barbara. And honestly, there aren't a lot of terrible moments from her.
No, What's Up, Doc? Is another wonderful comedy that she
I started
really
watching that the other day. Yeah. It's really good. I love watching her. Yeah. From Streisand, who's kind of this raw, fresh burst of energy, to Bette Midler, who has a different kind of... Bette is not subdued anyway, but she's a little more, I would say, witty. More like your aunt than your, like, best friend, you know?
Right.
I love watching her. Where does Bette Midler come out of? Because I've just kind of always known of Bette Midler. She's just always around.
Right. Well, she started out in sort of, low-level dives and cabaret, a lot of gay cabaret in New York.
This makes sense.
She was really sort of an icon in that world.
Oh.
And, and then she... I think she grew up in Hawaii, actually. That's what, her girlhood was in Hawaii.
So her and Barack Obama. Okay.
I hadn't thought of that, she when she started out acting in the movies, it's very interesting because the first real big performance that she gave in the movies was in The Rose, a sort of Janis Joplin-type character. And it's an amazing performance. It is like a great performance. It's harrowing. It's not Bette Midler-ish in the conventional sense.
Sure.
She's not doing, wink, wink shticks. I mean, she's very, it's a harrowing performance, unlike anything she ever did subsequent. And as much as I enjoy seeing her on screen, I always sort of wondered why she didn't go there again, because it was such a great performance in such a dramatic way that, you figure, why not more of that?
Do you think she wasn't able to get cast in those kinds of roles? Because she's not a conventional beauty.
Right, you know? No, it's true. She's hard to cast, she shouldn't be, but by Hollywood standards, you look for any excuse not to cast someone. It doesn't look like Grace Kelly.
Right.
But but she's marvelous in comedies. You know, Big Trouble. She's really funny in Down and Out in Beverly Hills, one of my favorite comedies. Paul Mazursky with Richard Dreyfuss and Nick Nolte. She plays a Beverly Hills housewife. You know, clumps around in high heels and order. You know, it's very, very funny performance. She's another one who has amazing timing, as does Streisand, and it comes out in their singing as well as in their performances. There's a direct link between them.
I love her in First Wives Club. It's my favorite non-musical performance that she gives.
I'm not a fan of Beaches, I have to say.
Beaches is just a hard story to get through. Yeah. It feels like a Lifetime movie before it actually was a Lifetime movie. it's just a lot. I am also not a fan of Beaches. I get why it's important to a lot of people, and they hold it dear in their heart, but it is just not for me.
No. But she really, I guess she had a big triumph on Broadway fairly recently in Hello,
yes.
Dolly.
Yes, so I thought she was in the original. Weird.
Yeah, no, she took it over. I mean, Carol Channing was the original Hello, Dolly on Broadway and was royally pissed that Streisand got the role.
You would be.
But I mean, that's often the case when you have a hit Broadway show that gets transposed to the movies. You know, Julie Andrews was not cast in My Fair Lady in the movies. Audrey Hepburn was, although Rex Harrison did both. And it's funny because Rex Harrison was a wonderful actor, but he couldn't sing, sort of like Richard Burton in Camelot. So they would kind of speak the songs.
Yeah, I recently, if you listen to the My Fair Lady album, they actually have old, like really cool sounding old recordings of the composer and book writer, and they're talking about how they're like, well, we got Rex, which is great, we love Rex, we think we're gonna get Rex, we have to rewrite all of the songs, the man cannot sing, he'll have to speak them. And then the way they're able to flip that to really lend itself to Rex's performance as a proper gentleman, it makes sense. He doesn't just go off into song,
right.
He's, you know, curt and it,
right.
It just is kind of wonderful, right. When those exceptions are made and they find a way to blend it back into the story.
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of a classic performance. I think he won the Oscar for Best Actor that year, be that as it may. you know, I mentioned Burton also in Camelot, who also just sort of spoke the lyrics. You can do that, but I think ultimately people held La La Land against Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone because they weren't like great singers or dancers for that matter. It didn't bother me.
It didn't bother me either. I thought that was the whole point of the movie, is they're normal people having this musical like romance.
Yeah, I mean, if they suddenly became a Aaron Rodgers, it would seem pretty weird.
It loses
it?
The magic. Yeah, the fact that they are just two normal human beings trying to get by, but having this great explosive romance, it sells for me the picture.
Yeah.
I get it. Some people are like, I came to see a performance. You should have checked who was going to be on the list. I'm sure they would have told you themselves. That's not what we do. For Bette's piece, I chose my favorite childhood movie, which is Hocus Pocus.
Oh.
Oh my gosh, she kills this role. She is the best. Let's check it out. This walk, just everything about her performance, the curled up lip, which I'm sure was harder to hold for however many weeks this shot. And yet still cheesy and camp, and now I see where we're getting the New York gay kind of high drag.
Yeah, I mean, she used to put on shows in the bathhouses.
Thank you, Beth.
What a great place to find your stage. My gosh, that's amazing.
Wow. And now a little bit of Margaret Hamilton and Wizard of Oz.
Yes!
You can't stop the things I do. I ain't lying. Been 300 years, right down to the day. Now the witch is back.
She definitely enjoys playing.
Oh, yeah. And then the way she reinvents this song, it's just so, she makes it fun.
Yeah.
Good joke. Happy Halloween. No, man, I'm serious. You got your head, you're not kidding.
I wish video cameras or cell phone footage existed of her performing at these bathhouses. I just imagine her trying to experiment and doing weird, like, fun, outlandish things.
Well, maybe there is some footage somewhere. She's probably bought it all up.
I want to move on from here, even though this is great. You can watch this on your own time, kids. We're running a little tight. So I want to move on to someone who surprised me that you chose, which is Willie Nelson. I had no idea Willie Nelson even had an acting career.
Yeah, well, he didn't have an extensive career, but there were two or three movies that he appeared in where he's first rate. Honeysuckle Rose, he plays a country western singer. Amy Irving is in it. Jerry Schatzberg directed it. Marvelous, marvelous performance. Totally lived in, but it's a performance. It's not just him doing Willie Nelson. There was another film called Barbarossa. It was a western directed by the great Australian director Fred Skepsey, who did Roxanne and Chant of Jimmy Blacksmith and Plenty and all sorts of great movies. A very underrated, underseen western with Gilbert Rowland as Ella Vega. He's right out of the right up from the prairie. I mean, he's totally authentic in this film, and it's a great performance. And there's another film, that he did. Alan Rudolph directed, which I wish he had acted more in the movies because he didn't really. I don't know. Maybe he was just too stoned to keep going, but it's true of a lot of these performers that they act for a while and then I guess they just sort of want to get on the road again, to speak. But he, particularly in Barbarossa and Honeysuckle Rose, he's quite amazing. If you ever get a chance to check him out, you definitely should because they're both underseen and underrated.
What do you think makes Willie Nelson like a good actor? Like, what is drawing you into his performances?
He knows how he comes across. Good singers also know how they come across. They have like a third eye that can sort of see what they're doing, and he's able to fashion it in such a way that he brings the best out of who he is, I would presume, of who he really is, but as a performer. So if you're a bad singer-actor, you're just doing what you do on stage, your persona in the movies, and that's it. But with Willie Nelson, in the Alan Rudolph movie, Songwriter is another example where with Kris Kristofferson, who wasn't a great actor. He was a tremendous singer-songwriter at his best. But Willie Nelson there's a lived-in authenticity there. There was this country-western guy, Jerry Reed, who was in a couple of these, smoky movies and stuff, but he was very good, too.
I love it. Well, at your behest, I checked out Honeysuckle Rose, and so I brought in a clip from that.
Oh, good.
And, once again, just incredible singing performance from him. Let's check that video out. Burning golden on the mountains in the skies. Aching with the feeling of the freedom of an eagle as she flies. Turning all my world away. You smile upon my soul as I lay dying. I always think the best actors are the ones who don't have any kind of filter or screen. We can stare just straight into their soul.
Yeah.
He definitely gives me that kind of feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, Schatzberg, who directed, I think, had come out of advertising, and he's always very good at focusing on faces. What he does, they say if you're a good actor, you should listen to what the other person is saying in the scene. Don't just stand there and then deliver your line.
Sure.
And that's certainly true in something like this. Teaching me that
yesterday, even the way he kind of approaches the mic, there's just a bit of hesitation.
Yeah.
The way their eye line is shot. It's just so magical.
And that's Amy Irving.
loving you is easier than anything I'll ever do again.
Yeah, it's just really...
It's super sweet, and
it's
I just love
movie.
It.
It's a good movie.
Okay, we have one more.
All right.
Would you like to do Diana Ross or Cher?
Ooh. What do you Cher?
Yes, let's... Okay. Cher's Moonlight was like a kind of a transformative moment for me. I knew Cher because I was a child in the 90s, and so I knew her in her like kind of techno disco-y revival moment. So bodysuits, big hair, Cher. Right. My mother was like, well, we're going to sit down and watch Moonlight. And I was transfixed. I didn't know she had such acting capabilities. I didn't know that she could be so moving. And then to see her opposite... Oh my gosh, not Keanu, but names. I forget who her love interest is.
Nick Cage.
Nicolas Cage. Yeah. Was so, like, the two of them together are such a weird couple as far as Hollywood standards go, but yeah. They pull it off so beautifully. Tell me about your introduction to Cher's acting career.
Yeah, just snap out of it, girl.
Yes.
Yeah, I, you know, you say you were surprised. My guess is that she was surprised too, because she hadn't really done much in the way of quote real acting. You know, she had been in a Sonny and Cher movie that Friedkin directed, you know, early on.
Right. I didn't know Friedkin did that.
Good times, yeah. But she hadn't really, you know, she was sort of a funny comedian on the Sonny and Cher show, and she had good timing and a sort of, you know, weird timing. But Norman Jewison, who directed Moonstruck, was, you know, a wonderful director who's guided a lot of actors to great performances, you know, In the Heat of the Night and many, many other films. And I think she just rose to the occasion, and everything that she was able to do. It's a terrific script, you know, John Patrick Shanley. That helps when you have great lines and really good characters, and she was surrounded with all these wonderful character actors.
Definitely.
And so she just was very funny and touching. There's a film that she made subsequently. She didn't make that many movies overall, and most of them were not that hot that she did make, but there's one performance that I think is her best work. Come Back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean, Jimmy Dean. It was a sort of a second-rate play that Robert Altman got a hold of and turned into somehow this amazing movie with you know, Sandy Dennis is in it and Cher and, you know, a number of other actresses who were I think all the best they've ever been in this film. It's a kind of mood memory play, a little Tennessee Williams-ish.
It's about a woman obsessed with James Dean,
right?
Living kind of in the middle of nowhere.
Right. Definitely. Yeah, so, I mean, it's almost a hallucinatory setting, but the characters are very real in the film, and the performances are really, you know, amazing. And Altman was actors loved him because he would allow them to try out all sorts of things. He didn't just, you know, all right, here's your mark, do this, now do this, don't change the script. Screenwriters hated Altman because of for the same reason. I think Jules Pfeiffer sued him over Popeye.
Oh my!
Who he wrote the script for? But yeah, I mean, Cher is amazing. I think in if nothing else, in those two films, it's again a demonstration of what she was able to do, and like to some extent Bette Midler and certainly Willie Nelson and Diana Ross for that matter, you wish that they had acted more.
Gosh, I wish Diana Ross. Even now, I mean, the fact that Tracy's out here doing amazing things and racking up Emmys and things, like, I would love to see them have their On Golden Pond moment where we get mother and daughter, as we had Jane Fonda and Peter Fonda in On Golden Pond, do some kind of movie, whether it's a comedy or they're both very good at drama. I would love to see them, but Cher really kills it. And if you haven't seen it, you should definitely see Moonstruck. And here's a clip from that film.
All right.
Ronnie.
I was like, this movie, because I saw
you come to make peace with me?
My Big Fat Greek Wedding first.
Oh,
and I was like, clearly an inspiration for that film.
Right. I mean, Olympia Dukakis.
I mean, I want to. Oh, Ronnie, of course I want to.
But, Johnny, I mean, your mother was dying. How did she recover?
I told my mother we were to be married. And she got well right away. I'm sure she did. It was a miracle.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah,
miracle.
Yeah.
Johnny, I have something that I have to tell you.
And I have something to tell you. But I must talk to you alone.
No, I need my family around me now.
Loretta?
Danny Aiello.
I can't marry you.
What?
If I marry you, my mother will die.
What the hell are you talking about? We're engaged.
Loretta, what are you talking about?
I'm talking about a promise, okay? He proposed.
Because my mother was dying, and now she's not.
Oh, Johnny, you're 42 years old. She's still running your life.
And you are a son who doesn't love his mother.
You are a big liar, okay? Because I have a ring right here.
Oh, I must ask for that back.
All right, the engagement is off.
In time, you will see that this is the best thing.
In time, you'll drop dead, and I'll come to your funeral in a red dress.
Loretta.
What?
Will you marry me?
What?
Where's the ring?
Johnny? Can I borrow that ring?
For our audio listeners, you can find this clip on a line. Yeah. I think Fandango Movie Clips has it. It is the most just hilarious situational comedy.
Loretta Castellini.
Look at all those great actors. Yes. Scardinia.
Will you marry me?
Look at these sets. My God, I love this house.
Yes, Ronnie. In front of all these people, I'll marry you. Love him, Loretta? Ma, I love him awful.
Oh, God, that's too bad.
Great ensemble cast. Cher kind of ties it all together. The scene that describes the title Moonstruck, just outside where she first falls in love, is also lovely. Really, just check out the whole film. It's great. You're not steering you wrong here. Look at the old guy cry. I just love this movie.
Yeah, it's a great film.
I think that's all the time we have today, guys. But Peter, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate these talks. They're so great. Yeah. I always learn something and come away with a whole new list of movies. So actually, I might try to go through and get you guys like a list of recommended Peter movies so you can see them. And maybe we'll have you come back and talk about some of the movies you recommended on the show.
Absolutely.
Until that time, guys, this has been the New York Film Academy Hour. I can still talk. It's definitely okay. Thank you for being here. And we'll see you guys next week. Well, I'm really excited because we're going to have Nunzio, who is the head of our screenwriting department, and his wife, who is his screenwriting partner, come in and talk about their comic books, the TV shows and movies they've done. It's going to be really exciting. So stay tuned. We'll see you guys next week.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.